For too many of us, it's become safer to retreat into our own bubbles, whether in our neighborhoods or on college campuses or places of worship, or especially our social media feeds. Surrounded by people who look like us and share the same political outlook and never challenge our assumptions. And increasingly, we become so secure in our bubbles that we start accepting only information, whether it's true or not, that fits our opinions, instead of basing our opinions on the evidence that is out there. In the course of a healthy debate, we prioritize different goals and the different means of reaching them. But without some common baseline of facts, without a willingness to admit new information and concede that your opponent might be making a fair point, if you're tired of arguing with strangers on the internet, try talking with one of them in real life.
It'll be too easy to talk about nothing, to talk about nothing. Be too easy to talk like I'm something. I'm balling, I'm stunting. Be too easy, chasing the fame, playing the game. It'll be too easy, but tell them we don't feel that. No, no, tell them we don't feel that.
Well, hey, everybody. Thanks so much for tuning in to another episode of Leading Questions with Calvin Moore. I am your host, Calvin Moore. And this week, Kent is not here, but we said that would be the case at the end of last week's episode, which is fine because, you know, sometimes I like to do things on my own. Sometimes I don't need Kent. Kent, I don't need you. I'm kidding. I can say that because Kent never listens to the show live or edited afterwards. He just shows up and then assumes that everything went as planned. But this week, we are going to be doing Women in Transition Part 2. We're talking specifically about women in the workplace, and we have seven wonderful ladies here with us this evening. Two of them will be showing up a little bit later. So currently we have five in the room, but I'm going to read all seven bios. I may shorten them. Please don't feel offended, ladies, if I leave anything that you feel is super important out. But since there are so many, I don't want to spend all of our time reading bios, but I'll go in alphabetical order here. First up, we have welcoming back to the line Ms. Ursula Adams. Ursula Adams is a self-described builder, scientist, sage, and anarchist. In the nicest way possible, of course, she has not burned down this building. Thank you.
Not yet.
She loves to challenge archaic ideas, build new systems, and share the resulting stories. Ursula is a leadership coach and the founder of the She Hive, a women's empowerment studio in Ferndale. Ursula, thanks so much for being here.
Thank you.
Next up, we have Mrs. Katie Bells. See, I keep wanting to call you Katie Lersch because that's
know.
What I remember. That's how I met you. Katie and I actually used to work together years and years ago back when I think we were in high school.
We were
in high school.
At
good
the
Lord.
Movie theater.
And
oh
we are still friends, the Beacon East, which is now Macomb County Community College or something.
Maybe?
Anyway, I don't know.
Not sure.
Anyway, in her previous life, Katie used to work at a movie theater. And she was also an elementary Spanish teacher educated at Wayne State. Currently, she is a stay-at-home mom. She's raising two little humans, a three-year-old son and a six-year-old daughter. Since her daughter was one, Katie has been working at home freelancing for a local brochure-making company, plus doing websites for various individuals. Welcome to the line, Katie.
Thank you.
Next up, we have Nessa Feller. Is that correct? Did I pronounce that correctly?
Yes.
All right, good. Nessa works for Reboot Connect Detroit, part of Reboot Career Accelerator for Women, which we'll go into a little bit on another bio. Prior to Reboot, Nessa worked in various HR, organizational leadership development roles at large global companies such as Levi Strauss and General Motors, as well as rapidly growing startups. She's passionate about her work in leadership development and coaching, and her definition of success includes helping people she works with become successful themselves. Nessa, thanks so much for being here.
Thank you.
Next up, we have Ms. Jennifer Foster, who will not be here until the second half, but I'll go ahead and read her bio as well. With more than 15 years of experience in the public relations and social media sectors, Jennifer Cherry Foster is the founder and president of Catalyst Media Factory. The company provides media relations and social media support to small businesses and works especially close with startups. She holds multiple degrees from the University of Michigan Dearborn, including a Bachelor of Arts degree in communication and a Bachelor of Science degree in microbiology. We will welcome her when she gets here. And then also absent right now, but we'll be here in a few moments, Dr. Saba Maroof. Dr. Saba Maroof was born in Durham, North Carolina, and is the daughter of immigrants. She has a bachelor's in psychology and received her medical degree from Wayne State University, completing her residency in adult psychiatry from Henry Ford Hospital and specializing in child psychiatry from Wayne State University. She helped start free mental health services at Huda Clinic, a free clinic in Detroit, and enjoys discussing issues of transcultural psychiatry with trainees. She is also the host of Unsung Heroes with Dr. Saba Maroof, which is also a podcast here on the Podcast Detroit Network, and I am her co-host for that show. We record on Fridays, which is great. Next up, hopefully, Rachel, I will pronounce your last name correctly. Rachel Stafiel, is that correct?
Close. It's Stafiel, but Stafiel. No one ever says it.
Okay,
right.
All right. Well, thank you for forgive me, but at least I am in good company with everyone else getting it correct incorrectly. And I've already forgotten how you just pronounced it. Rachel
Stafiel.
Stafiel. Stafiel. Stafiel. Stafiel. Got it. Okay. Rachel Stafiel holds a BBA, a Bachelor of Business Administration from William & Mary with a focus in accounting, and a Master of Business Administration from Duke University. What up? She works for Reboot Connect Detroit. With Nessa, part of Reboot Career Accelerator for Women, the mission of which is to help women become current, connected, and confident to return to the paid workforce or pivot their careers. Along with her business partner, Nessa, Rachel offers a continuing professional development program for all women intent on growing their workplace tech skills, network, and confidence. Rachel, thank you so much for being here.
Thank you.
And last but not least, Kara Tertzag-Levadini is back on the line. We love her fiery spirit.
Thank you.
Kara is a lifelong Michigan resident. She's a wife, mom, lawyer, political wonk, and super turbo feminist. I love reading your bio when you're here because I believe you're the only one that has super turbo feminist in her bio. In 2016, Kara started her own facilitation practice. She currently helps people settle their legal disputes through facilitation. Kara graduated with distinction from U of M Dearborn and obtained her law degree from Wayne State University. Kara, welcome back to the line.
Thanks for having me.
So let's dive right into questions here. What are some of the biggest issues facing women in the workplace? Anybody jump in at any point? Let's get this conversation going.
I'll start with the one that is directly related to Nessa and I. And I think one of the biggest issues facing them is how to manage a career and a family at the same time. It is whether women decide to continue working after having kids or whether they decide to stay home. There are different issues, but it's hard to manage it. If you're working, how do you manage childcare? How do you manage when your kid gets sick? How do you manage the biases that, oh, well, she's a mom now, so her career isn't that important to her, and more. And if you decide to stay home, well, will I ever be able to go back to work? Am I letting my brain go soft? Am I letting my degrees go to waste? So there's hard decisions on both sides.
Okay.
I would also say that I believe that just having to leave most of yourself at home every time you walk through the office door is probably one of the bigger issues facing women as well, too. So psychologically, I can't be my emotional feminine self when I walk in the door. I have to play to a male-dominated patriarch. And even though all the research shows that a feminine style of leadership, not a female, but a feminine style of leadership is actually a much more effective style of leadership, I can't do it at work because then I'm too emotional I'm too emotional.
Gotcha. You know, it's interesting. It's fiction, but my wife and I are watching this show called The Bold Type. It's a really great show. I love it. It's like Sex and the City for young people, I guess. But the boss
are
on
you
the
calling me old?
No. I mean, like, my wife was like, if you like this, you'll like to watch Sex and the City. And she tried to put Sex and the City on a couple days ago because she has all of them on DVD, even though they're all on Netflix now. I was like, I don't want to watch this. She's like, why? Because everybody has flip phones. I don't want to watch a show where everybody has flip phones. Give me something current. And so The Bold Type, we're watching it, and the main character. They're all working for this women's magazine called Scarlet. So it's supposed to be like Mademoiselle or whatever. And the boss is a strong female leader. And I've looked at my wife several times. I was like, man, if I had a boss like that, it would be fantastic. Mm-hmm. And I just like her style of managing. And I didn't feel like she was any weaker by playing into, I guess, more feminine aspects, for lack of a better term, I guess, mm-hmm. in terms of leading. But anyway.
Yep. Community, distributed leadership, it's all a great part of feminine leadership.
Good stuff.
Very good.
I think one thing that a lot of women face when they're in the workforce is a sense of guilt that they're not good enough at different parts of their life, that they're not a mother if they're working. You know, people sometimes say, oh, you're not a stay-at-home mom. You're letting other people raise your children for you. And there's a lot of judgment that goes on, and I think people judge themselves as well. And they feel that they can't do everything well, and they either need to be at home with the kids or work. and they can't do both and manage relationships, and they don't always have support as well. And a lot of that's emotional support from other women and have that community around them. So I think the guilt kind of takes over and also leads women to either pull out of the workforce or go so all in into their jobs where they probably don't give their families the attention that they would like to.
Okay. I run into that all because I'm trying to get back into work, and I'm busy all day just staying at home. And people sometimes wonder, like, what do you do all day? Like, I do a bunch of stuff. And I'm like, how do you do that? And then you work on top of it. How do you even balance that? I don't know. I will have to figure that out.
Lean in, peace out. Yeah. That's what I say.
I'm right there with
you. Okay, so everybody here understood that. I'm like, I'm a guy. Just explain it because I have no idea what that means.
So Lean In is the Sheryl Sandberg book, and you know it's by Facebook's Sheryl Sandberg, who's an amazing woman, right? But her suggestion to women is, and it's a good one to those who need to hear this message, is volunteer. Assert yourself. That doesn't always work, especially for women like me and like many, many of my friends who are told, don't be so confident. Don't be so aggressive. It's intimidating to people. So my thought is the biggest problem women are facing in the workplace is spending their entire careers trying to convince a workplace that's unconvincible to change. Get out of the workplace and start your own business if you're unhappy with your employer. If you're happy, stay. That's great. But if you're unhappy with your employer, start your own business. There was never any doubt. Even though my dad was a judge for 20 years, I came from a good legal pedigree. I had honors when I graduated from college. I had community service, internships, working my butt off since I was 14 years old. There was never any doubt I'd work for someone else. Why? Why wasn't I ever encouraged to start my own business? My husband never went to college, never had to go on a job interview even, because his family owned several companies. There was never any doubt he would make millions of dollars opening his own company. We're not encouraged to do that, and we need to encourage other women to do it. And I will say this, because I don't want it to be a man-bashing thing.
Yeah.
A man helped me do this. I found a mentor who did what I wanted to do. And he said, you know what? This is a good idea. I think you'll be good at it. And he took me under his wing and he helped me. So I think that you can find men who are huge allies, particularly fathers who have daughters who want to see them succeed. But I think we need to, if you're unhappy in the workplace, don't spend your entire life trying to change it. Get out of it and start your own company. Pay yourself what you think you're worth. Go on your own schedule. You want to work from home, you work from home. You want to get an office, you get an office. And if you want to come on podcasts at 5 p.m., you yep. come on podcasts at 5 p.m.
So let's talk about that, paying yourself there. Let's say that you're not working for yourself. Let's say that you decide to work for corporate America or work for a small business or whatever. There's this gender pay gap. I posted about this a week ago, and I said, oh my gosh, there's a gender pay. Well, I mean, I knew there was a gender pay gap already, but I didn't know that there was also a racial pay gap. Yep. So even though women are paid, 75 cents on the dollar, African-American women are paid even less than that. So you still kind of have this hierarchy, racially speaking. And I posted this article, and I expected there to be pushback on it from my more conservative friends, which I have a lot of. Because I was raised in conservative evangelical culture. But I did not expect abject denial of the gender pay gap. Like, it doesn't exist. Here's all the studies that show why it doesn't exist. And it was this one Harvard economist who went rogue who said that this doesn't exist.
Well, if one said it, it must be true.
Hey, look, there is one guy who denies climate change as well. So yeah. It must be true. But I didn't expect. But I'm not an economist, and I'm going to actually have an episode specifically about the gender pay gap and racial pay gap and things like that in several weeks. But let's talk about this gender pay gap. I understand this to be a thing. Does it exist? Have you experienced it? And why do you think it is? Why do you think it exists?
Well, yes, it does exist, and regardless of that one study, all the others do show that it actually does exist. And being with the background in HR, I can actually tell you that it existed because I knew what the salaries were. Many different things that go into it, but I will say for women, we don't ask for raises. Where men will walk in and say, this is what I need. And usually it's just a matter of asking. They will get it. Women are like, well, I would like, I think, because we're trained. We're trained. Mm-hmm. And I think this is changing now. I think my daughter will be much different than I ever was in the workplace. But we were trained to be humble or that we didn't deserve it. And so we're not as emphatic when we ask for what we need. And so I remember every time I have ever asked for a raise until I just quit my job and started my own business, I probably cried like because I was so embarrassed to ask for what I deserved and what I needed. I was a master degree professional, and there was no reason I shouldn't have been asking what the fair market value for my job was.
Did you ever find out that someone else doing the same job was being paid more than you?
Absolutely.
And how did...
Well, you know, and I would just get mad, but would I confront anybody? No, good girls don't confront people. I would now, but back then I wouldn't have.
Something that I did is that I found out someone else was getting paid more money. And what I did is I asked my boss, I said, okay, let's look at this. Let's look at some data points. Look at the experience, the background, the performance ratings over time, mm-hmm. and look at everyone in the department and take a look at what they're making. And am I close? To what they're making. I'd like you to evaluate that and crunch the numbers.
Yep.
And I did get a raise, but I came from very quantitative.
Yep.
Look at these numbers. Look at these scores. There's not a lot of me negotiating or your interpretation. This mm-hmm. is what it is. This is what you should pay me.
And so it seems that that is more assertive than what Ursula was saying a lot of women
I
tend to be.
I feel I deserve this. Now, we talk in the language of feeling.
Interesting thing about your response and your response is this tends to be, again, this is what came up when I put this out on Facebook, in that pushback of, you know, women just aren't getting the raises because they're not asking.
Well,
and that was a very conservative response. Well, I mean, that was a conservative response, but then you're actually saying what they were saying, like women just don't ask?
It's one factor,
okay.
I believe. It's
okay.
one factor.
What are other factors at play?
I mean,
then,
like
though?
Typically women aren't they aren't the keepers of the home. They're not, you know, the head of the household. They're not expected to make as much. There's all of those years and years and, you know, all of these, you know, patriarchal ideas of what women actually need to make. You know, we're reserving the money for the men that are taking care of their families.
Okay.
And, you know, I think that there's just a lot of that built in. And there is, I think, and I'm grossly generalizing mm-hmm. here, but because women tend to talk in the language of feeling or not be as emphatic or not be as assertive, they aren't looked at as subject matter experts quite as closely as men who will
thought leaders,
yes, that will walk in the room and say any old bullshit because they've been taught to be bold and boastful.
Well,
and not to say that they're all full of BS.
No, I have wonderful men surrounding me, and my husband is one of them. I found out I worked for one of the big three, and I was raised that if you work really hard and you get your education, you keep your head down, and you do a great job, you will ascend beyond your dreams. And that's just simply not true. I mean, it's the bootstrap fallacy, right, that we have in America. If you're poor, it's because you deserve to be poor because you didn't do what you needed to do. I found out that there was a gentleman in my group, I'm a lawyer, who was a legal assistant who was making more money than me. And when I raised it to management...
As an assistant to lawyers.
Correct.
Which you were.
And when I raised it to management, the unofficial official story was that he had a family to support. And I'm not kidding. And then I was threatened. Well, how do you know how much money he makes?
Yes, absolutely.
How do you know money he makes? And they couldn't believe that I had the audacity. And I had that audacity because I had a man, my husband, who couldn't comprehend that I would even take that. And said, you go in there and you tell them. And then you tell them you want to get promoted. And when they said no, he said, get the hell out of there. Why are you staying at a place that doesn't value you? And I come from a place of privilege because... and this is very anti-feminist, I had the forethought to marry a man who could take care of me if I needed to be taken care of and whom I didn't have to work my ass off to support because he had potential to do really well. And he said and helped give me that strength, start your own thing and come help me with my thing. I started helping him with his business and I realized I can do this. And again, that's not to say it's for every woman. If you're happy at home, you should stay home. If you're happy with your employer, you should stay with your employer. Those are all wonderful contributions we can make as women. I'm talking to the women who are scared and afraid. Don't be. It can't get worse than being paid less than a legal assistant when you incurred hundreds of thousands of dollars of debt to educate yourself in law school.
So respond to, again, you know my stance on things. I generally tend to be fairly liberal, but again, come from a very conservative background. So again, people are going to push back and say, well, I'm sorry that happened to you. I'm sorry that you had a bad experience at that law firm. But it's not all law firms. It's like, you know, it's not all men, right? That kind of thing.
It wasn't a law firm. I worked for a really great law firm. It was Ford Motor Company that did that.
Okay. So that's – I never heard of them. What do they do?
Right? Let's just put that out there.
Okay. All right. Well, that's huge.
Yeah.
Right? I think when you explain it, it wasn't this little boutique company. It was one of the largest companies in the world. Like one, I think one Big Ten. It's like the Fortune 10. Like that's one of them. So that's big that you put that out there. So, anybody else? Gender pay gap. Thoughts on it? Everything's been said.
Well, no, I'm sorry. That just kills me. Of just because I thought, you know, the whole like, well, you know, guys get married, they need to support their families. I'm like, yeah, that's like 1950s. This is still going on.
Yes.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. Well, I think that corporations have become to women in this, you know, 2017, what husbands were to women in the 1950s, a false sense of security. And when that goes away, you end up living in poverty because you have no savings, you have no backup plan, and women need a backup plan no matter what.
I don't even understand how that's a thing. I mean, just looking at, okay, the 1950s, you had guys who were making particular salaries. Inflation was lower, you know, didn't have cost of living was lower, things like that. And now today, as far as I see, most people need two incomes in a home. Yes. And so the excuse, it sounds like an excuse to me. It is an excuse. I'll just call it an excuse. Well, a man has to support the household. And you see it in our taxes too, head of household, those kinds of things. It's there. But a man has to support a household. And a woman doesn't seem to correspond to reality where I'm married. We're not surviving without our two incomes. I mean, my wife makes a little bit more than I do, which I'm okay with, right? She's my sugar mama.
I used to be known as Golden Goose back in my days when I worked.
Well. Yeah,
but I mean, I'm building my own company and things like that. But she makes more than I do. But I know that without my funds from my company, we wouldn't be able to live. We wouldn't be able to make it. So this idea that, well, a man has to support his a family and a woman doesn't have that responsibility seems like total bullshit to me.
I think I might be the only one where my husband's actually able to support us both and I can stay
no,
at home.
No, actually. Yeah, really. I'm with you for once. Yeah.
I mean, there are a number of men who can.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But a lot – I would say that most people in the middle class at this point, especially lower middle class – are in this kind of space where husband and wife both have to work.
Well, yeah, I feel like I'm in the minority. I do.
Yeah. Go ahead.
No, go ahead.
I was just going to say, what about single moms?
Yeah.
It's not like most people absolutely have two incomes in a family. And
right.
It's something I know at Reboot we talk about as well around some women have to work and how do we encourage and help them get back to work. And it's really a struggle, especially if you've been staying home. And you don't have the confidence necessarily, and sometimes your husband may have discouraged you from working as well.
And that other issue of that's where I get to that racial pay gap. I'm like, okay, if black women are paid less than white women, and a lot of black women are abandoned by a lot of, you know, black men for whatever reason, that's a whole other podcast. But if they are single and they are making less than men and then even less than white women, and they are head of household, I start to connect the dots as to why certain people, and I don't want to say this is a sweeping generalization about black people because it's not true, fundamentally not true, but why certain people choose not to work and choose to live off of a system, because it's going to be easier to live off of a system that's going to pay you more than going to work where you're going to have to deal with a lot of shit that you shouldn't have to, and you're going to get paid less pennies on the dollar than men and white women. So I feel like I'm starting to connect the dots economically for why certain things happen. That's not an excuse for allowing that to happen by any means, but I'm starting to see the connection points on that.
I would agree. To the point about having a husband that actually supports you, and it's not actually a topic we're talking about, but interestingly, the dynamic in a marriage that changes. I was always the one that brought in more money. I was known as the golden goose to my husband.
Oh, yeah. Nice.
So, yeah.
Whatever's good for the goose is good for
yeah,
the gander.
Yeah. And I quit my job last year to start my own business and took over a 50% pay cut.
Oh.
And so, and it was the first time in 15 years of marriage and 20 years of being together that my husband is making more and is actually responsible for bringing in the money for our family. And it has changed the dynamics of the marriage even. Whereas before, he would ask my permission to spend money, and now he's just out there doing whatever he wants to. And now I feel like I need to ask permission because it's not always my money that we're earning.
That's how I feel about it. But yeah,
isn't that weird? Okay, yeah. So my wife makes more money, and a few weeks ago, hi honey, if you're listening, a few weeks ago,
she's out earning money.
we were buying gifts for my daughter, who is not listening to this podcast, so I can give away what her birthday gift is. We got my daughter a Coach backpack. We were out at Birch Run. It was outlet store, so it was not full price Coach, right? Because Daddy can't afford that. But my wife bought a Coach purse for herself, and she was trying to hide it from me. And it came up again today. I keep bringing it up, just razzing her about it. So I go into the Coach store. I'm like, "What are you doing?" She's like, "Nothing." And then later on that night, I find out she had bought this purse for herself. And I was like, "Why did you hide that from me? There was no reason for you to hide that from me." She's like, "Well, you know, I didn't know what you would think." I'm like, "Honey, you're making all the money. I literally feel like you can just buy whatever you want, and I have no say in whatever's going on. Obviously, we're a team, so we should make decisions about finances. But I feel that way sometimes as well. Like, can I spend $10 on a beer at the bar later?" And then I'm like, "Hey, buy whatever you want because you're the golden goose."
Yeah,
right?
Exactly. Totally. I used to do that to Brian all the time. "You can't buy that. You can't do that. We're saving money." You know, if only I knew how good our pay was at that point in time. And now he goes and buys the most outrageous, and he doesn't buy outrageous stuff, but well, sometimes. But, you know, and I'm like,
I saw your Stephen King trip. That was pretty cool.
Yeah, that was pretty awesome, wasn't it? But, you know, now I just feel like we are a team, yes, but that has shifted. And now I'm like, I guess I can't say anything anymore. I guess I probably still could, though.
So let's move forward and talk about sexual harassment now. And you kind of alluded to it there, Kara. We're the way I worded this question, I guess we're not. But we're well past the days of Don Draper and Mad Men.
No, we are
not. Okay, yep. See, told you. Where men could sexually harass women with near impunity. However, sexual harassment still remains a very real issue for women in the workplace. I don't know if any of you ever worked like a retail job where you had to watch the sexual harassment video.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Yeah. It's the same video everywhere,
oh,
by
my
the
God,
way.
Yes.
Just, "Hey, Susan, nice sweater." I'm like, "All right, okay." What are some – where every guy's like, "What? He's just complimenting her sweater." And then every girl's like, "No, he's not. No, he's not at all."
Yeah.
What are some instances you've dealt with? How did you handle it personally, and how did your employer address it?
I actually filed a sexual harassment claim with a former employer, and I was the fifth person to do so against the same person.
Okay.
And their answer was to send us to a trust consultant to learn how to trust each other. And I literally called our chief administrative officer a bad mommy when she told me that was their solution.
Wow.
So they ended up doing a third-party investigation like they did every other single time. This time, like they did every other single time, they found that I was an overly emotional female.
Of course.
But this time he resigned.
For a better, higher-paying job?
No, actually. So that's the only victory in this one. But it is insane to me. And not even 6 months after that, another coworker was at a conference with another male colleague that we worked at. He got drunk and complimented her breast, and he's still there and she's not.
Oh.
Because
reporting sexual harassment, and this is not my personal experience at all, but reporting sexual harassment often leads to a woman compromising her entire professional future.
Absolutely.
She's made to feel, in many instances, that she's done something wrong. If she didn't report it, that contemporaneous with the, as President Trump would call it, pussy grabbing, she is told that, you know, she's got something to hide. Again, this is not my personal experience at all. So You know, but with that said, there are also women who make false claims of sexual harassment.
I think they're probably far less,
right?
Than
but
those that
but I don't think. I mean, but just to anticipate your question, Calvin, from the conservative side, sure that happens. But most women know that it can be a death knell to your career if you allege any form of discrimination or sexual harassment, because God forbid you be seen as a complainer.
Yeah, and yeah, I guess where I relate to this, a couple stories. One, where I relate to this one is I actually got fired from a job for sexual harassment. It actually was a false claim in that particular job. Totally false claim. Girl that I was married at the time, she liked me. I rebuffed her. She reported me for sexual harassment. I got fired. Didn't understand what was going on. Put them through the ringer with the civil rights department, which was fantastic. So it cost them tens of thousands of dollars, and it was free because the state took care of it for me. But anyway, I lost the case, but I still cost them a lot of money, which is all that I cared about. But then I did get fired from a job for sexual harassment because I was stupid. I worked at Lifetime Fitness when I first got to college. And I was young. I was dumb. I'm working around all these hot women, and I kept I was like, man, oh, she's gorgeous. I didn't say anything crass. But it's like, you just can't do that. And I didn't know. Like, I was just like, hey, I thought I was just being nice. And a lot of guys, I think, get away with sexual harassment because they feel like they're just being nice. And this was me not having any feminist friends. This was me never having conversations with my mom or my sister about this, coming from a totally different background where compliments were just supposed to be accepted. And I've had a lot more conversations about, you know, compliments are more about how you feel rather than about how you're actually making that other person feel. So now I'm more aware of that, and now I look back and I'm like, okay, I probably deserve to be fired from that job for that. But no, I don't want to go to the place where most cases are false, because that gets into the whole most rape claims are false, which is categorically not true. Some are, but it's categorically not true, which makes people feel afraid. But where I have solidarity with you on this is it's more for me. And you know my area of expertise tends to be, you know, racial history in the United States. Race. Don't bring up racial discrimination. Just let it go because you don't want to be seen as a complainer. Mm-hmm. Well, geez, Cal, it was just a joke. It was a racist joke. Why did you tell that? This is not the place to tell that. So I totally – but then nobody wants to talk to you and everybody steers clear and they start whispering about you and HR doesn't want to deal with – you know, even though they say on paper, we don't want people sexually harassing and we don't want people making any racist jokes and we don't make any homophobic jokes. The moment you say something, I feel like there's a target on your back.
I was told the day that I filed my harassment claim that it would probably be in my best interest if they let me go, because I wasn't going to be safe there at work anymore.
You were told by who?
HR, our HR director, that it was probably in their best interest. And that is historically what had happened when women had filed harassment
claims.
Didn't
you work in HR?
Yes.
So if you worked in HR, did you not see this happen multiple times before it happened to you?
Yes. Yes. It was so bad I wasn't going to
say anything. Right?
I wasn't going to let it go any longer. I knew I was putting myself on the line at this point in time. Actually, the lawyer who represented me had represented some of the other women, and he's like, this is exactly how it's going to work. They're going to tell you they're going to do an investigation. They're going to tell you they didn't find anything wrong. This is how much money they're going to pay you out before they have to take it to a board to sign off. So just go in there and ask for that much money, and let's be done with it. And for whatever reason, mine didn't end that way. They actually brought in a third party to actually do the investigation.
So in a sense, a company in a sense, a large company, and Bedrock a few weeks ago put up a big picture of just white people, you know, how do you see Detroit? And they came out to this big event where people were kind of griping and complaining about it. And I said, you know, to this large group, I said, Bedrock is here because, you know, they have to listen to make you all feel better. Mea culpa, get rid of it, fine. But they're a large company and they're going to operate within the law. So they've done what they need to do in order to keep their stockholders happy and to get people to still hire in and not seem racist. I heard you're racist. No, we took care of it. Okay, fine. So I feel like companies operate within the law, but they don't really care. When I hear those kinds of stories, I'm like, do they really care?
No, well, I think we have a misconception of what HR is, too. So HR is there strictly to protect the company. Now, sometimes that looks like investing in your employees, right?
Wow.
And engaging your employees. But at the end of the day, the HR director, who is the one, by the way, that pushed me to file the harassment claim because he saw it, said the minute that I filed, now you know we're not friends anymore. We can't talk because now my job is I'm on the inside, you know. And it wasn't the only instance in that workplace. It was years that had built up to that. You know, I had to defend in a group of six men where we were just starting to blog online. So this was obviously a long time ago. And one of my male colleagues blogged about his sex life on the organization's blog.
Oh.
And I asked him to take it down as the head of communications at the time.
You're such a bitch.
I know. No, I wasn't a bitch. I was a prude. Literally got called a prude
right,
in a meeting.
Thought we were going for the C word. I was I'm not saying it.
So many times women are classified as, you know, whores if you are in any way sexual, or you're a prude if you don't like the sexual comments. And again, I'm not talking about my personal experience. I'm talking about experiences and anecdotes I've had from my personal friends, all of whom are in the workplace, and what they've had to go through, right? But they're too scared to say anything because they are dependent upon their incomes to survive.
Yes, and people, like you said, people start to distance themselves with you when you become the troublemaker. You know, all of my best friends at work, they're like, we support you behind closed doors, but we're going to have to distance ourselves from us because we're not going to be lumped in with you. And it is.
Family to support at 75 cents on the dollar.
Exactly. And it is an incredible double standard. I have female colleagues who happen to have really nice figure, a typical, stereotypical, beautiful figure, who are told not to wear their shirts too tight. Meanwhile, my male colleagues are talking about their sex life and using company equipment to do home porns and known about it. They're getting away with this, but we can't, we can't sit where our breasts might show. So, yeah.
Any
others? I'm so sorry that happened to you.
Thank you.
I'm loving the fact that I worked at home and was just shielded from all this.
Yeah.
Oh, God.
Anybody else? Thoughts? No experiences? Okay.
I could go on and on.
Okay.
I used to waitress, but I mean, that would be a whole other thing. So, yeah. But
So let's talk about that that B word. There's another B word as well. Men who find themselves being corrected by women often view women in leadership roles as bitches or ball busters. Why are you such a ball buster, right? This is often an allusion to the belief that men are supposed to be aggressive, and I think we've alluded to that, right? Mm-hmm. And women are meant to be softer. How can women succeed and lead without being viewed negatively? Or if you're just going to be viewed negatively, how do you not care about being viewed negatively and just fucking lead?
Start your own company.
Hire a team of women.
Yeah, exactly. Well, you know, even the research shows, though, that because we do a lot with the Lean In, and, you know, right now there's all different trainings that are going on trying to empower women to act more like men in the workplace, which I hate because I don't think women need to be more like anybody else but themselves in the workplace. I just lost my train of thought. Sorry, I got really upset there for a second.
No, it's fine.
It's inside my head. Oh, why, you know, but the research shows that if women emulate those characteristics of men and, you know, are aggressive and then get to the top, they don't then turn back to themselves and become good, kind women or, you know, the women that they were before. They continue to emulate those bad behaviors that they've learned even when they get to the top. It's called the Queen Bee Syndrome. Hmm. And
I face that.
Yeah. I've many times and I hate it.
Yes.
I've had some really horrible female bosses.
So talk about how you face that.
I faced that at work. I had someone very much like that, and they kind of boss around the other women as well. And I know we've talked a lot about how men treat women, but we haven't really addressed very much about how women treat women in the workplace.
Okay.
I had the ability to stay home for a while if I wanted to. Other women didn't, and they kind of resent that sometimes. And, you know, sometimes you see that some women – don't have children and they work really hard and they're like, well, I've earned this. Mm-hmm. I've earned this because you're a woman and you have family and sometimes you leave early and I'm the one stuck here doing the report, or I'm the one that's always taking care of everything. And so I deserve this role and I'm going to treat you that way. Mm-hmm. And I think it's unkind and it's unprofessional, but it's just not the right thing to do. And I think in the long term, it's really detrimental to the whole group, not just that particular woman as well. But I think we really need to think about that, is how women treat women.
They do.
And
Now, so Jennifer's not here yet, and maybe she can talk more about this when she gets here. But I sent out When I sent out the questions to all of you, I kind of asked, you know, what are you, some of your basic thoughts in and around the idea? So I kind of had an idea of what you're all bringing to the table, where you're coming from. And one of the things that she had brought up is something that you had just brought up on the other side of it, where, yes, women have kids. They have responsibilities to family. They got to leave early. And she said that a lot of companies then dump on these single women. Well, you don't have a family, therefore you ought to
do this, right? Mm-hmm. I have felt that as well.
So
I would also like to correct, it's not leaving early, it's leaving on time.
Oh, right. Yeah, right. Because a lot of companies expect you to work overtime. It's like, no, I'm not working overtime. I got kids and family. I gotta get home.
Because I think of many of the mothers that I ever worked with, and they're like, I have to leave at 5 o'clock. And we're all like rolling our eyes, like calling it leaving early. It's not leaving early.
It's leaving on time, right?
It's actually, setting boundaries, respectable boundaries.
Interesting.
Well, I think that's really important. I'm kind of going off.
No,
is around setting expectations with other people. And I've had this too, is what do you expect of me? My boss, what do you expect? When do you need this? And this is what I'm willing to commit. And please judge me on, on the following things. Mm-hmm. And if I'm here, if I do it late at night, I deliver. And if I don't deliver, then we can have that conversation. But a lot of it is also around setting expectations. And I think that's really important. And that way, also, the leaders can say that as well. I had a boss, and he was a vice president. He would leave, and he'd say, I have to go watch my kid play soccer. And he wasn't making an excuse.
That's so commendable.
Yeah.
No. It's commendable when you're a dad, because the dad's going to be in his kid's life.
Yeah.
Well, he wants to work from home today. What a good dad. Oh, she wants to work from home today?
What a soccer.
How lazy.
Why did we hire her, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
Total double. Yep.
You're a little more cynical than I am. I've had a lot of great experience. I think, we're here and we're talking about, some of the challenges. But I want to give credit, just like Kara did, around mentors as well. I've had people that stood up for me. I've had people that have supported me. I have people that have seen how I was treated and have called out other people to say that is not how we act. And, we judge people on merit. And so I have seen that. So, and by the way, I was in HR. And I do think some companies really try to do the right thing. They don't always know how to as well. I know companies that I've worked with have. So I just want to give a shout out. Shout out to the companies.
I've worked with really amazing HR people that understand that the right thing to do for the company is invest in their employees. But at the end of the day, HR is all there to protect the company and not the employee. I mean, it just really is why it exists.
So you mentioned something in terms of kind of going back to the single women, married mothers working or single mothers working versus single, no kids, all that kind of stuff. I have a friend, and I called her a soccer mom once, right? I called her a soccer mom. I didn't mean it in any derogatory sense. I just know that her kids are involved in things, and I was like, okay. And she's always like, hey, on Tuesday nights, my kids are involved in, School of Rock, and then they're involved in ballet. I was like, oh, you're like the soccer mom, you're going to all these things. But I also know that she is very high up in the health system here. She's working all the time. She works a very good job. Her husband works a very good job as well. And she got very upset at being called a soccer mom, because for her, soccer moms were moms who don't work and – or work with their kids at home. I'm sorry. Being a mom is one of the hardest jobs on the planet. So let me scale back on that, right? So, but the moms who don't go into a workplace where they're paid, right? And when I called her this, she was very upset because she is treated very poorly by soccer moms. Okay, you're at work. You're not taking care of your kids. You're not at as many PTA meetings as we are.
Oh, you're letting other people raise your kids.
You're letting other people
letting
raise your
them
kids.
Letting them be mom.
So
motherhood is a competitive sport.
So for those of you who are in the workplace or have started your own jobs and you're also balancing kids, and Katie, you're looking at going back to work, right?
Yeah.
How do you deal with this?
Are you still?
don't scare you. But how do you deal with that particular reality of those who stay at home, choose to stay at home, and see that as an honor that you are somehow squandering? or not being a good parent.
I mean, I'll speak. I've been home with my kids for most of the last 15 years, and I actually have to say I don't have that opinion. I understand it's a very personal decision. And there's times, as someone who has a really good education and had a really good job before I had kids, sometimes I struggle with, well, I gave that all up to stay home, but it's been very valuable. It's been very valuable for my kids. I have a now ex-husband who works and travels a great deal. And as I talk to my kids about returning to work, they're like, well, we kind of like you being there because dad's not. Even when they're at his house, you know, he gets home at 8 or 9 o'clock at night. So I personally, and most of the other women I know who stay home, try not to judge, because we understand that it's a very personal decision to do that. But the thing that happens is, we talked about how women treat women in the workplace. From middle school on, women, girls judge each other. It's just, I think, more so than men do. There's a lot of judgment for whatever reason. And I'm raising a daughter, and I'm trying to encourage her not to do that. But it just happens.
I feel like there's a general reawakening and a more kindness, I think, between people. But also that we are starting to measure our successes differently. So success is not necessarily – it can be if that's your thing, but it's not necessarily the high-paying career. And so as I think as we get smarter about how we can actually – define success for ourselves. So it can be that I was an amazing parent, and that's what success looks like to me. For me, you know, I had gotten to a certain point in my career where I finally passed that six-figure mark, and it felt really, really good. That was, at the time, how I defined success. And giving it all up and draining the bank account was really scary, but I had to learn, like, at the end of the day, that's not what really filled me up, right? Mm-hmm. So, you know, that title, that there's a lot of, like, stuff that other people assign us that, you know, that we use to judge ourselves. So the title somebody else gave me, a pay somebody else gave me, and now I'm like, I can be whatever I want. I'm the boss of me, but my schedule is mine. That's what success looks like to me, is that I can go walk on Belle Isle Beach on a Wednesday morning if I want to. Or, you know.
I built a patio today.
Awesome, isn't
that.
It?
It looked good.
Yeah. Nice as hell,
good job,
isn't it, right?
Yes.
I did it wrong the first time. I had to take it all out and put it back in. But anyway, yeah. My wife helped. She was great.
Yeah.
Anyhow, you were about to say something.
No, I was just going to just echo everybody else in I think in getting into kind of the parenting aspect, whatever decisions we make as moms, half of the moms will glorify that decision and half will vilify that decision. So I learned that, you know, the second that I got pregnant and all these very personal questions about how I planned on handling my pregnancy, my labor, my delivery, and my return or lack thereof to work were going to be handled, that I got to drown out that noise, because I will be chasing a dragon for the rest of my life if I want to please everybody. And for me, it's all about what makes me happy, my husband happy, and my family happy.
But how did you get there, Kara? It's easy to say that. I mean, you're a very confident person since I've met you. You have a lot of confidence. You're very intelligent. You have a lot of family support. But what advice would you give to others? Because they don't have that. They don't have the support and the confidence that you do.
Well, I would say a couple of things. One, maybe don't share so much about what your personal decisions are. I think, you know, my husband's much more private than I am. People would ask me, just, are you going to breastfeed? Well, I don't, you know, and now I would talk about it like crazy, right? But at the time, I didn't know what I was going to do. And I find that as women, we want to answer everyone's questions. And my first piece of advice would be, you don't have to answer anybody's questions about your personal life, just generally. Because if you don't answer the questions, you may not get their advice. Because usually, and again, you have to be independent of the adulation as well, so that when someone tells you what an awesome mom you are because you've been co-sleeping and breastfeeding and you didn't go back to work, that should affect you no more or less than when someone tells you you're a shitty mom because you work. So that's you know, but you got to transcend your ego that way too.
And that's hard.
That's very difficult. I'm a work in progress every day. I'm horribly flawed, and I have so many, I make tons of mistakes, but I also think that women, you know, chase this dream, particularly, you know, highly ambitious women, you know, want this dream. I read an article about female partners at law firms, and that once they got that partnership that they always wanted, it wasn't terribly fulfilling to them. So, you know, once you get it, what matters? And again, this is very anti-feminist, but I believe feminism is about choices. So if you choose to stay home and that's what you want, that's great. What if we all worked on our marriages and pleasing our husbands as much as we worked on pleasing our employers who do not care about us?
Or pleasing ourselves as much
right.
as we're pleasing our employers.
Right.
Let's get,
right. Well, I mean, it, you know, I don't know. It, just a thought.
I have no problem with that suggestion.
Yeah.
But so I liked the question that she asked, though. And again, yeah, Kara, you're a very confident woman. I'm a very confident guy. People are often like, oh, Calvin, I don't know how you do your show and how you ask the kind of questions that you do on Facebook. I could never do that. That's just Facebook. Everybody's a keyboard warrior on Facebook. Doing this is the real shit in life, getting people who disagree with each other to sit at the same table and go, I fucking disagree with you. I don't hate you now. I don't think you're an idiot now, but I disagree with you. And my question, though, out of all that is, even in my confidence, I have never been – the type of person to say, that's none of your business. I was basically kind of, I guess a good word is compliant. And I think a lot of women are taught to be compliant.
Mm-hmm,
you know,
mm-hmm.
if someone asks you a question, even if it's personal, are you going to breastfeed? You are obligated as a woman to answer said question about whether you're going to breastfeed or not. You know, are you going to have a wet nurse? Are you going to go to a hospital? Are you going to have a C-section? Or are you going to have
a
baby?
Do you mean
accolade?
A midwife?
Did I say
a wet nurse?
Did I say
is
wet
when
nurse?
A woman nurses.
That's my bad. My bad. Yeah. Yeah.
So. Which is, again, yeah. is fine if you want to have that.
Look, but a lot of terms I'm wrong on. I will go to buy my wife a shirt, and the sales clerk will go into all the different types of shirts that women have, and I'll go, blue?
Yeah. Did I just reverse mansplain?
No.
Yes. I she-splained.
No, you did. No. Well, I'm about to mansplain. No. I didn't understand. So you were actually just fucking explaining.
Yeah. Exactly.
So,
can I also I want to push back a little bit. So I believe, yes, you are not under any obligation to share your stories. But if you are the type of person that will speak out, share those stories, because the more that those stories get shared, the more shame gets taken away from them. So saying stuff out loud, I think, is just an amazing. Now, there's something like, you know, it's none of your business if I want to breastfeed, which would be really funny since I never actually had a child. I married into my son. But, you know, but I do think that there is a lot of power in women actually speaking up and sharing these stories. Like we're sharing around this table right now, because I bet you there's somebody listening to it that'd be like, oh, I thought I was the only one that got called a prude because I don't want to read about your sex life at work. So I
don't want to read about your sex life at work.
I would read about it at home, but not at work.
Yeah, I wouldn't particularly care necessarily either way.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, I think we are kind of a puritanical country and, you know, whatever. But that's beside the point.
Yeah.
The workplace demands a different level of professionalism than, you know, my open-minded. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So we've got about 10 minutes left before we go to the first break. Our other two guests, Jennifer and Saba, have entered into the room. So I'll let you come into the conversation as well. I'm not going to make you wait the 10 minutes before you come back. But thank you both for being here, by the way. I said I'd welcome you both when you got here. Let's talk about the glass ceiling. I remember one of the most listened to episodes of this show was when Hillary Clinton lost the election. And she had symbolically, for her expected victory speech, rented out a building that literally had a glass ceiling. Mm-hmm. So symbolically, they were going to have this big party, right? So a woman breaking the highest glass ceiling that there is in this country, becoming president of the United States, that glass ceiling is still very much intact. But after this particular presidency, I think we're going to be able to shatter that glass with a nuclear bomb, personally speaking. from North Korea. Anyway, that's current events.
I forgot about that. So, I think we're on to marches and rallies and KKK.
Yeah, I know. Good Lord. But let's discuss the concept of this glass ceiling. From pay gaps to promotions, men earn more and men rise through the ranks more than women, even among women who don't have kids and never leave the workplace. Why do you believe this is, and what's the solution to this challenge?
Start your own business.
I think we're going to keep coming back to start your own business, right?
I am a big proponent of entrepreneurship and microenterprise as an equalizer for women. maybe not an equalizer, but an empowerment tool for women. I mean, Detroit is huge for entrepreneurs, and more women entrepreneurs
well,
are
sure.
up here.
But people around the country are listening to this. People, yeah. We have listeners actually around the world for this show. Not everybody can, right? Not
That's
everybody
true.
Is going to. And I know someone who's a great lawyer. She started a boutique lawyer law firm in Detroit for small business startups. And then she wrote this big blog about why that ended up not being the right move for her. Now she's a huge lawyer with, I want to say, General Motors, right? She's doing very well. She realized going back to the corporate world was what was right for her. And so that was good for her. But there are also people who just can't.
That's
I can't start
true.
My own business. I need to have insurance. I need to have steady income. I don't need to worry about, am I going to get a client? Like with my startup, I'm worried about, is the phone going to ring for me to do another tour? Right?
I would absolutely agree. And I know it's not.
Yeah.
It's
so for those who it's not feasible for, how do we deal with the current reality of the pay gaps and moving through the ranks within, I guess, corporate America?
Well, I think there's two things that we can look at. One, women don't tend to value their own work, what they do. So even when I started my own company, I had to learn that, oh, this wasn't just a freebie. This was how I was earning my living now. And there was value to that. So instead of discounting things repeatedly, I had to learn that that I should be able to charge for that. The second part of that is women don't historically ask for raises. Mm-hmm. And they're much more passive about that. So, yeah.
Actually, and Jennifer and I are in a masterminds group together, so we've talked about this issue. So Jennifer, I was her first client when she left.
She
gave me almost a freebie. But we talk about, like, we give away our services for free all the time. Whereas I call my lawyer, who's a man. If I call him on the phone, he charges me. And so it's not just, you know, and that's not to bash what he does. He actually has earned the right. He, you know, I'm using his talent, which, you know, is his brain. And I, you know, I coach when women call me, I'm like, oh, we'll talk and have coffee, you know, and actually getting to the point where I'm charging every time you talk to me. It doesn't feel again, that's that feel, but it doesn't feel right for me.
Hmm.
Yeah, so early on in my own business, I was floored. But I reminded myself, I had a client who said, I need to take a month or two hiatus and then I want to come back on board. But I want you to work with my marketer on this item in this particular month. And I said, well, no, we're not working together in this month, so I wouldn't be doing that. There'd be a cost. Well, no, you said you'd do it. And I said, well, wait a second. I don't think you want me to work for free, and that's what I'm hearing.
Yeah.
And there was just dead silence on the other end of the phone as he kind of realized that that's, in fact, what he was hoping for.
Yeah. Hmm.
This is Saba. Sorry for joining in late, but thanks for including me in this conversation. I'm a physician, and it's actually interesting because I actually never realized that there was a pay gap for physicians, that there's a gender pay gap. I just kind of always assumed that there's like a standard salary in whatever field, and that's it. And actually, I just recently I found out that there really is. And actually, if you look at the research, and I have to look this up right now, but among all physicians, actually females earn an average of 74 cents for every dollar a man makes. And that was according to a report, I think, in 2016. And that translated to female physicians earning roughly $91,000 less a year than their male counterparts. And the biggest pay gaps, they looked at this according to specialties, and it existed for vascular surgery, occupational medicine, and pediatric endocrinology. It's kind of random. But I thought that was really interesting and I was really surprised by that. Because, again, I thought this was kind of a standard thing. We kind of all went into med school. It's all, you know, long ride, very long years of schooling. And it's interesting because even now, if you're looking at medical schools and the makeup of the classes, it's many times half the class is women, if not more female medical students are entering in the profession, and that this is still happening even in this profession. And I totally agree with you, Jennifer, that I think I've experienced this myself. It's like, you know, I've been working in the same place for a while. I've kind of been here, and there's like this there's a hesitancy to like ask for a raise or, you know, have the courage to
assert yourself.
Exactly. Mm-hmm.
Do you also think some of it is maybe women are more agreeable in that they think, well, I'm earning a living wage, and so that's all I really need, and I can support myself and my family, where maybe men tend to be more driven by how much can I earn and look at that figure a little differently?
That could definitely be part of it, yeah.
And maybe there's this assumption, too, that men are the, like, I don't know, men are providers for their family, and women are kind of, I don't know, I guess doing this for a hobby or something. I don't know, sure.
That $50,000, you know, master's degree was just for some fun. Yeah.
You and I did an episode of your show, Unsung Heroes, where this was completely foreign to me, the pay gap, kind of going back to question two here, but the pay gap existing within that particular field. Now, I do know that women in tech make 122% of what men do, apparently.
Oh.
It's crazy. I don't know why. There's obviously extenuating circumstances that lead to that, which I think is awesome. So get into tech, ladies. But I found it really interesting in the medical profession. I'm going, okay, you have an entire floor dedicated to new babies, right? You've got a lot of women doctors doing these things. You've got to realize that people come back. But the fact that that exists in the, you know, in the medical world, I kind of understand it. Or expect it, not understand it, expect it, you know, working for Ford or GM, right? Because they're losing you for X amount of weeks and all that kind of stuff. But they don't deal with having floors with babies and realize what happens to people's health and all that kind of stuff. Within the health services, I would not think that that exists because they realize that people's bodies break down. They realize that people have babies and that they need time to heal. I would think that that would be built in because you understand medicine. But apparently that exists, and I find that
but
really
crazy. But
we also
think of healthcare isn't actually run by people who understand right?
I understand it's run by boards and everything like that.
Not even boards anymore. For-profit
organizations,
evilness of that. I was going to look up another thing that I had read recently that was actually looking at women, female, and male physicians. And I think it was something that they were looking at the evidence around the quality of care delivered and kind of like what patients – actually, it kind of translated into better practice. And I think that's interesting because even the characteristics were different between men and women, whereas I believe it was something with male physicians, the qualities that patients were looking for were, you know, like confidence and, you know, of course, like acumen and just being skilled. Whereas for women, it was that plus that they were seen as compassionate or caring or like – you know.
Yeah, you had to be nice too.
Yeah, exactly.
Always. That's not like, just physicians,
really?
Right?
Yeah, exactly. That's just an example. It's just kind of representative.
I think that being nice is an asset. I find that it's much easier for me to be nice to people. That's just my general. I'm a jovial person, and I want to be nice to people, and I try to get along with everybody. And I, in some of my what other people would call bad experiences have taught me really important professional lessons. And that is I can communicate with anyone and find them where they are and communicate with them on a level that they can understand and that will move them because we have to figure that out when we're in the workplace. Because again, you know, we have wonderful men in the workplace whom we don't have to have any guard up with. And then we have those guys who we know don't think we should be there, don't think we've earned a spot at the table, and never will. You have to communicate with them. There's no getting around talking to those gentlemen. And so you have to develop the skill set to do that. And that presents us with an opportunity, because if we're able to develop that skill set, even though we shouldn't have to, we're able to develop that skill set. It makes us more marketable to the marketplace generally and to other people, I think.
Yeah. And I know that we're wrapping up, but can we talk when we come back? I actually thought of something I want to talk about closing or lowering the glass ceiling.
We will yield the floor to you when we come back. So we'll take a 10-minute break, and Ursula will take us back when we come back in. All right, cool. Well, hey, everybody. Thanks so much for waiting on the line. We're going to jump right back into the conversation we were having. And before we went to break, Ursula wanted to say a few things about the glass ceiling.
Something just dawned on me. So if anybody's familiar with Playing Big by Tara Moore, the book, if you've read it, which I think is a phenomenal book. I'm not much on self-help books, but that one actually really spoke to me quite well. One of the things that she proposes in the book is that one of the reasons that women are not as successful in the workplace is they don't have mentors. And usually and we're always told we need a mentor, right? And usually when we find mentors, they're men that have achieved those ranks, right? And not to bash men by any means, but men don't have the same experience in the workplace. And research shows, and we've all experienced it sounds like, that the female bosses that we have that get up to those ranks aren't wasting their time on actually mentoring anybody else or So she actually proposes in that book that you can be your own mentor. And I know this sounds crazy, crazy, but there's actually some work that you can do to uncover your own inner mentor. And I am not a esoteric woo-woo kind of person, but she has a guided meditation that you can listen to meet your inner mentor, because she is of the opinion, and I think she's right, that you actually know the answers that you need to know. Now, there are, you know, skill sets and, you know, cultural norms and all those things that mentors can help you uncover and discover. But really, answers about your life and where you want to go and, you know, yourself, you actually do know the answer to. So there's a guided meditation that she can take you through. You can download from her website that actually helps you meet your inner mentor, which is you 20 years in the future. And it's crazy. It starts out with, imagine a beam of light coming out of your head. And I'm like, oh, I am not a fucking unicorn. This is over. But I stayed with it and did it. And I actually, it was really prophetic for me. Because what it did is it just showcased to myself. You interpret everything you hear and see in this guided meditation, as you do with all meditations. And but what it really helped me understand is I actually know the direction I want to go into. I don't need somebody else to lay that out for me. Now, again, there are things that mentors can do for us that we don't know for ourselves. But it actually helped me to define what was important. And I do a lot of work. That's my life. Work is to define what's important to me and other women. But I just wanted to raise that as, because one of the things that does hold us back from actually achieving greater heights is this idea of mentoring and somebody showing us the way. And I think there's something about trusting yourself just a little bit more, that you actually know the way. So anyway, I just wanted to bring that up.
That's great. I love meditation, and I was raised by a very new age mom who I think is very responsible for my confidence, as well as a dad who empowered me. And, you know, my dad passed away. I was terribly upset about it. And I still am. I cry even thinking about it. As you can see, I tear up. And I was having a really hard time at work. I was kind of at a crossroads. What am I going to do? And this was years ago, before I had my daughter and decided, okay, peace out. Because I was still in that trench of, I can do this. If I work hard and I keep my head down and I do the right thing, the right thing will happen for me, right? I had a dream, and it was like 80-year-old me. And this is how Nessa and I know each other. So I don't know if I ever told you this story. It was like 80-year-old me, and I was in a white tennis outfit. I had never played tennis in my life.
Kara's my tennis partner. Disclaimer.
Now, I had never played tennis in my life. And I walked in, and I talked to myself. I said, you're going to be fine. Stop it. Smile. Go do your thing. You're going to be fine. And at that time, I had wonderful friends and wonderful support network all telling me how fabulous I was and how great I would do and not to worry. But it really wasn't until I had that dream where it was me telling me everything was going to be great. And the next day, I picked up a tennis racket.
Yeah.
And I had never played tennis in my life. I was 35 years old. And I was like, I told my husband, I said, I'm going to go buy a tennis racket. I'm starting to play tennis.
Because older me does.
Older me plays tennis.
Yep.
And older me loves it. And I will say this, you know, I was always someone who had a plan, and the plan that I had for myself, I thought would make me super happy, and I was happy, and I never planned on having children, and the things that I planned for myself were nowhere near as good as the things that have happened to me that were unplanned. I planned my daughter, but, you know, there are other things that are unplanned, and those things that have happened that I really hadn't dreamt of have fulfilled me and made me happier than anything I ever planned.
Yeah.
So, you know, there doesn't have to be a concrete plan for everything.
Let's move forward to the kind of the second half, because in the first half we did talk about more entering the workplace, breaking down barriers. What does that look like? Let's talk about exiting the workplace on this half. For the most part, and we'll still talk about entering as well. But many women, and we talked about this in the first half as well, many women put their career on pause, or they end their careers entirely once they have kids. Like, hey, kids are here. Now it's time for me to be a mommy. And, you know, yes, I have multiple degrees from Duke and Harvard and all these things, but it's going to be Cheerio necklaces from here on out, right? This can feel – I grew up with Cheerio necklaces. I don't know if y'all still do that, but those are great. This can feel like the death of a dream or the squandering of potential. For those of you who have left and come back, or left and stayed home, how did you feel about that new reality? I believe you said you were at home for 15 years, right?
I have been home for most of the last 15 years, and I am. I do have that great education. When I decided to stay home, I had met my now ex-husband in business school. So we kind of graduated and were on the same path. He was making more than me. But we were on the same path. But we moved to Michigan. We have no family here. We had no friends. And a year later, I had a baby. And we were both working like crazy and traveling. So it wasn't – we just did not see a way for us both to do it. So I had my first son. I decided to stay home. And then we soon after had a second son. And for the first – for a while, I just kept myself really busy. So I didn't see it as this squandering of potential because, you know – you had babies, and then there were developmental issues, and I became an expert on autism, and then we decided to adopt a daughter, and then we had an interstate move, and then another interstate move, and this and that. So there was always something to keep me busy where I was learning and developing myself. I didn't start to feel a squandering of potential until my husband decided he didn't want to be married to me anymore. And then it really started to challenge my identity, because I did before have this identity that, okay, well, I am a mom and I am a wife. I run our entire lives. All he does is go to work and come home and everything else is taken care of. And all of a sudden, with him gone, my responsibilities really didn't change that much because I still had to take care of everything for the family. But all of a sudden, I'm like, well, gosh, I've kind of wasted my degree. I've been home for this long. What am I going to do? And I started searching for what to do and how to go back to work. And after being gone that long, it's like, well, can I still do what I used to do or not? And I was searching for, it kind of got me to where I am now because I was searching for MBA refresher courses and I was searching for ways to get back in. And I found these groups that were for women who had been out of the workforce. It's like, God, we need something like that here. And Reboot happened to have something that said, start Reboot in your city. And I looked at the content they offered. I said, you know what? That's really valuable because there's a lot of women out there like me who've been out of the workforce and want to go back, but really don't know where to start. So, I've kind of taken Reboot as my way to get back into the workforce, and it's gotten me thinking again, it's gotten me networking again and giving myself hope that there is a way back into the paid workforce.
And that's interesting because I've talked to a couple people in the past few weeks, and you know, I had lunch with someone and she said, well, I want to refer someone to you since you're hiring, but you know, they're a little bit older, they're about 60. And I've heard this from a couple of people over the past few weeks, and to each I've responded, I would love to work with a grown-up. And so I think there's a lot of opportunity out there, and I, you know, so we just need to get word out.
Yeah. I also, this isn't going to solve any of the issues, but I think that there's a dynamic that I want to change, that we only go to school to get a job. Like, you didn't squander that education. Mm. It's yours, you know, mm-hmm. and it is used in so many other ways. It's not, it's about learning versus achievement. You know,
right.
Do we just go to school to achieve or do we go to school to actually enrich our lives and learn? And that wasn't squandered. It was never squandered. Now, you know, ideally employers might look a little bit different. But so, you know, start your own business.
Well, I'm sorry. No, go ahead. No, it's just, it's just interesting when you're talking about just, you know, squandering it. Mm-hmm. And you may not know this, although you know me a long time. So I went to school and I went to school to become a Spanish teacher. And about 4 years in, I had a stroke, and I had to kind of stop everything. And I was kind of at that point, like, do I want to go back to teaching, and or do I want to learn something new? I learned something new, and I learned about graphic design. And then I had a baby. So, and then I right after my daughter was, like, about one, I started working at home for a graphic design firm. And that's – but now it's, like, now that that's over, I'm, like – do I actually, like, get back into it? And although actually talking to you guys, I'm like, I could actually, like, go into business for myself, kind of, like, yeah.
Yes, you could.
Yeah.
Well, I think that's part of the evolution, what we're seeing. And so Ursula and I have a friend in common who has really made made her business work for her. 9 to 5 doesn't work for her. She's out of the same office space I'm in, and I might come in and see her there at 7 o'clock before the kids are really off and grandma's around. She works evenings. She holds events on weekends and things like that. And so she said, this is what works for me, and it's very fulfilling. You know, she enjoys it and can earn a living from it.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Just getting, you know, different brochures to do. I would do work in the evening. I would do it when my son was napping. I would, mm-hmm. It worked for me. It did.
Now, it this is obviously I come from the perspective of working. As far as I understand, my perspective seems to be in lockstep with a lot of how men think. Like I gain my identity from the work that I do, right? I freak out when I don't have a lot of tourists coming through. I feel like I'm not doing it. So the fact that I built this patio, like I made after building it wrong and getting super frustrated that I built it wrong, I thankfully have an engineering friend who told me, you have the wrong sand in here. You need to put the right sand in there. I got the right sand. Then I had a scientist friend come over yesterday who knows space and time and all that kind of stuff. He's like, all right, this is how you think spatially. This is how you can get everything level. Like, okay, cool. So after 2 months of my backyard being torn up and not feeling like I'm making any progress, it's almost like a metaphor for my work. Like when I don't have tours coming in, I'm feeling like I'm not being of use. So when I get stuck in the house not knowing how to do something, yesterday we got the sand level, started putting in the pavers, realized I didn't have enough sand. Went to Lowe's twice to get more sand, to get everything leveled out. I worked until 11 o'clock. I pulled in the lamp from the living room, brought the extension cord outside, and just got everything leveled and got all of the pavers in. And then today I went and got the liners for it. And it's done now, right? But I had to feel this sense of accomplishment because I wasn't doing any tours. And I feel like if I'm not doing work, if I am not working, I am somehow not contributing to my family, to and I'm a black man, so I don't want to be seen as a lazy black person, right? I mean, that's a constant reality. Like, mm-hmm. I wonder what my neighbors think because, you know, I'm always at home and my wife is up, bye, honey, and she's off to do whatever, right? So there's that existential reality as well. And then just in terms of, am I contributing to the culture? Am I just leeching off of the system, or am I a guy who's letting his wife do everything and not doing anything? And so it's kind of interesting to hear the totally different perspective on work, because I've always just been taught this is where you get your value from. This is why I'm afraid for my dad, who's 60. I feel like my dad's going to work until he dies, because when he had four kids, so he didn't have any savings. But also, what will he do once he retires? Like, my dad's not going to. I mean, he went to the Naval Academy. He served his country with distinction. He's not going to be a greeter at Walmart. He's never going to be fulfilled doing that. But we gain our fulfillment from, and our identity from, what we do. That's the question that we get at so many mixers. Mm-hmm. Hey, excellent. What do you do?
Yep.
You know what? That's the first question. I don't think that's necessarily just from. I mean, that's not just for men. Women get that as well. Yep. What do you do? But men, distinctly, as far as I understand, get their identity from the work that we do. And when we're idle, we feel like we are not at all valuable to the world.
It's funny. My dad retired. Actually, it's been almost 10 years. He had to retire not early, but he was in his late 60s. That was late for his line of work, which was he's an anesthesiologist. And I remember feeling kind of sad that he was retiring, because I just, same thing, I kind of just felt like, I felt like this is, you know, that's a huge milestone, and that, of course, you know, it's kind of, he's getting older. And I was like, Dad, what are you going to do? And he's like, Beta, which is like an Urdu, means like dear. I have lots to do. And yeah, he does. He's the kind of, I mean, there's not a lot of men like him in the sense that he has a lot of hobbies. And actually, my mom, I'm a psychiatrist. My mom's also a psychiatrist. And so she's kind of one of my biggest role models. She actually has her own practice. They live in North Carolina. And he is kind of like the manager, kind of the office manager for her, which I know that kind of drives her batty sometimes, but he's definitely keeping himself busy. But I guess it's kind of, I mean, for me, I work, I'm blessed that I can work part-time. But getting to this point was, as I mentioned, like medical school residency. And I had kids, I started having kids my last year of medical school. And it definitely was a struggle, especially when there were so many times where I was one of the only people in my class or in my cohort that, number one, was married, and number two, had kids. And I always felt like I had to kind of prove myself, like, I can do just as much. I can perform just as well. I can do just as well being married or, you know, having kids. And I kind of felt like I was always working towards that goal. When I'm done with my training, I can finally just work part-time. And I always knew that that's what I wanted to do, because I guess in my field, it's like if I'm going to be home for a while, I would feel like I'm losing kind of my clinical skill and kind of that knowledge base. And so for me, this is just kind of a, I mean, I'm really blessed. It's a really, it's a happy medium because it's like I can get stressed at work and overwhelmed and have like difficult maybe interactions with people sometimes if, you know, just difficult cases or things that I've heard. But then it's like, okay, I'm off tomorrow. And then after the, it's probably, and I would tell everybody this, my friends, it's probably the first time in my life that I look forward to Mondays. Yeah. Because after the weekend with the kids, and we have four now, I had three during my training and then our baby when I was done. And it's funny because I thought I could take as much time as I wanted, but now I had my own patients and I still only took like about 6 weeks off when I thought, hey, I can take like 6 months. But no, patients were like, wait, Dr. Murph, how long are you going to be gone? When are you going to come back? And so I felt kind of like this obligation towards them. But that's really been a happy medium for me, But but at the same time, I'm always like, should I be doing more? Am I doing enough? I got to this point where I was like kind of doing, it felt like I was doing the same thing day in and day out. And it's like, should I be doing more? Is this it? I got to that point. Now other times I look at my kids and they're like driving us all crazy and I'm like, oh my God, I should just like just give up everything and be home with them. Obviously I'm not spending enough time with them. So it's like this, for me, it's like this constant struggle. And I think that it's never going to feel totally balanced. I know it's getting into one of your future questions, but balance. But I think a new term is kind of like this work-life integration.
I don't know if Katie, you got your finger up, but
yeah, okay.
if I don't say this, I'm going to forget it. So let me say, and then we'll go over to you. I don't know if any of you have seen this new movie. Well, it's not new, but it's on Netflix now. Sing.
It's
fantastic, right? Okay, so I just watched it 2 nights ago, which is great. Great having our own house because now we can just chill and watch movies on the couch instead of watching only in our bedroom. But that's neither here nor there. I love having a living room. So we can watch this movie. We watched the movie in the living room the other night, and as many married couples do, we started it, and then fell asleep, and then watch it the next morning. So in the movie, one of the main characters is a mom, right? And she's a pig, and she's got the litter. She's got like 24 kids, right? And I love this. You're talking kind of about this reality, right? Of, you know, oh my God, you know, my kids are like, should I just give it all up and just take care of the kids? I like that she built a little machine that took care of the kids. But the dad was very much the, you know, he goes to work, he comes home, he's oblivious to all the everything that the mom is doing at home. And it kind of goes to that squandering question, because you're like, okay, so the mom, she's doing all this work, but then overnight she builds this ingenious contraption to take care of all the kids. So I'm like, that girl went to MIT, right? or the animal version of MIT in the Sing world. But I just thought that was interesting and kind of speaks into this reality. That's why I love cartoons, because it kind of gets past all of our defenses and speaks truth, because it totally speaks truth to everything that all of you were saying. I don't necessarily know that I like the fact they made the busy mom character a pig, but you know, whatever.
I was okay with it.
Okay,
they were,
all right. I don't think they were making any kind of statement. No. But you know, I was like, all right. But Katie, you were about to say something.
Well, no, it's just interesting because we just watched that movie today for like the 80th time.
Thankfully, since I don't have any kids at home, that will be the one time that we watch it. But I did download the soundtrack.
But watching that movie, I loved it. I did. So I was like, I don't mind watching this for like, you know, 800 times. No, that's actually because you're talking about just trying to balance between like, because like when you don't have kids, you're like, okay, you devote yourself to work. Mm-hmm. Now that you have kids, and I would hate to tell people, just so you know, if it's work and my kids always come first. Like 10 times out of 10, my kids come first. So I mean, if my kids are sick, I have to stay home with them. If I, you know, and I'm wondering, like, that's probably going to turn off people. I have that. I guess doubt, where I'm like, people are not going to want to hire me because I'm going to have to be honest and be like, I can't devote myself entirely to this job.
Yeah, and I think that does go into our next question and some things that both Nessa and Rachel have alluded to about, you said dad comes home at 8 or 9 at night and your kids are like, he's not home, right? But there's this expectation within work where that's okay, right? That dads will sacrifice what they ought to be doing, taking care of their kids, where, okay, mom, if you say my kids are my highest priority, jobs are going to look at you like, dad's like, hey, I got to get out of here at 5 to go to my kid's soccer game. Well, that's a great thing. But generally men, I think, speaking as a man, there is this expectation that men will give up family. My dad never came to any of my sporting events, none of my plays, because he was constantly putting food on the table. as you know, as an adult, I now understand my dad gave what he could, and he had to do what he had to do to make sure that he took care of four kids and a wife, right? But there, I think there is an expectation on men to work longer hours, to work harder hours, and for single women to pick up the slack because, you know, the moms have to leave on time, as you were saying earlier. But let's talk about for those of you who are working mothers, whether you're working in corporate America, whether you've started your own company, whether you're a stay-at-home mom working, how do you manage work and home life? What is the role of dad? What is the role of mom? And why is this question asked of women more than it is asked of men?
Because people keep asking it.
Yeah. Can I just, and I have no skin in this game because, like I said, I married into my daughter. She didn't come to live with us till she was 18. So I've never really had to take care of her.
Tricky
like,
age. Yeah.
I'm an adult.
Oh, yeah. Oh. Yeah.
Really, really well at this. But, you know, we talk about women putting their children first, you know, like what a you know, big deal, or, you know, how it becomes such a big deal. But I'm just putting myself first all the time. And it's not that I work all the time now. I come first all the time in front of my work. And I think that goes to this idea that Calvin was saying, like, I have redefined what success is. And so it does not have to be work, work, work. And there are, and like I say, I jokingly say start your business all the time, but there are actually really good employers out there that understand that as well, too, that you are a human and that you come first. They're far and few between, but they exist.
I mean, although, but then again, because again, I'm trying to get back to working. No, my husband, the company he used to work for, because he would go to work and he would do work. He would come home from work and continue to do work at home. And it got to a point where I said to him, we can't keep doing this. And like on the weekends, he's doing work. Mm-hmm. I'm like, and now, and I actually give a shout out to his company, Vectorform. He does that. They let him work from home if he wants to. They let like they actually like think of you have a family you got to and mom and dad are more 50-50.
And so more companies are actually I believe there was a huge announcement a couple of days ago. I think that Apple was always a good company when I worked for them. Unless you're working on the actual tech side, they're a nightmare to work for from what I've heard. But if you're working on the corporate side or the my computer is broken, I need help. Apple Care at home, you can call in, you can work at home, those kinds of things. So there are a couple of large companies that are trying to. I think tap in to the fact that there are working moms, there are working dads. Mm-hmm. More so the working moms, I think they're trying to push for because you know you want to hear a nice, soft female voice when you're calling to have your tech taken care of, that kind of deal. So hey, you're at home anyway.
Yeah.
You want to work. You feel like you're squandering your degree. Here's a free 27-inch iMac, and sit in this chair for X amount of hours. But there are companies that are, I think, trying to tap into the fact that people are staying at home or people are trying to find a way to move back into the workplace. Again, Apple's a very good company to do that for. I did Apple Care at home and then they generally hire within. Okay, you were Apple Care at home. Now you want to work in a corporate store. Come on in because you know our product already. So those, I think that there are people that are doing it again. But Ursula, like you said, few and far between.
Few and far between. Yeah. There's one out in Ann Arbor that I think they're just so amazing that I want to mention them. It's called Menlo Innovations.
Okay.
And it's a tech firm. And they, so you have to work in the office. There is no work from home for the most part for Menlo Innovations. But it's a tech firm and you don't get a laptop because you have to leave your work there at 5 or 6 o'clock.
Oh.
And moms can raise their babies at work. And so they raise them because they actually eschew the traditional HR and they always call it run the experiment. So one of their employees couldn't come back because she hadn't found daycare. So Rich Sheridan, who owns Menlo, is like, let's run an experiment. And so they raise the baby together at work. Like,
I don't quote me on this. I think Quicken has a daycare center in.
No, it wasn't a daycare. It wasn't even a daycare center. The employees took care of the baby all day long together.
Oh, wow. Okay. Well, yeah. That's kind of interesting. Takes a village.
They've done it.
Shout out to Hillary Clinton.
Yeah. But they also said they've had some of the best clients because clients behave themselves when babies are in rooms.
Oh, oh my God.
My staff has volunteered to do that. I had a baby, they were like, just bring the baby here. We'll take care of it.
Yeah.
But there was someone who was supposed to be on the panel tonight, and she said, you know, I can't find a sitter. You know, that actually might be kind of cool if you brought your baby because, I mean, it kind of speaks to the reality. She didn't come. Yeah. I think a lot of parents still kind of feel like, very uncomfortable when the baby is super small. Like, I'm sorry. You know, women are very apologetic Like, yes. I was not apologetic when my baby was crying. Like, this is what babies do.
That's a whole different podcast. True. Yeah. Women's language.
Yes. Why are women so apologetic? That's there's another podcast called V to V that was one of their first episodes. Why do women apologize so much?
I've been on V to V. Very interesting.
Me too. And it wasn't about apologizing. Oddly, they invited me to the one to talk about masturbation.
Yeah. Yeah.
How did I become the expert here?
I talked
about motherhood. Yeah.
One week it's about the body and sexual pleasure, and then the other week it's about just kind of standard women's issues. But that's neither here nor there. Shout out to the ladies who run that podcast. But continue. What's the role of mom? What's the role of dad in all this? Anyway.
I was going to go back to something earlier. I think the technology has been a double-edged sword because what we find is, right, I think somebody mentioned this, you go to work and then you come home and you bring your laptop and even on your phone, there's expectation that you respond right away.
Yes.
I had someone at work annoyed with me because I did not respond within 45 minutes. And the fact that I was in a meeting with one of the most senior executives at General Motors and that responding to her text was not more important than that kind of aggravated me because I think people just expect, especially the texting of the world, we need to constantly answer people's questions and that our time is always not – it's not even our time. And I think it's really hard to be able to have that break to say to defend your time. And that's why I call it defending your time to say, I will not be available from 7 to 10 at night. And I had a talk with my manager about this. It was an experiment that we did. I will log on after my kids go to sleep from 10 to 12. I'll finish up everything that I need to do. But really trying to set that expectation with other people. We've gotten calls at 10 o'clock at night for my husband's company asking him some question about a spreadsheet.
Wow.
And that's like, really?
Yeah.
But on the other hand, having the technology allows us to work from home. It allows us to go to our doctor's appointment, or it allows us to have lunch with our mom or do our laundry while we're on a conference call as well. So I think that there are advantages, obviously, that let us have more freedom. But then we also feel tied to our technology because there's an expectation to constantly respond, to constantly work all the time, and that's more important than whatever we may be doing at the moment.
Yeah, and before I had a life, like any sort of life, like before I knew that I wanted to be a person outside of my job, I trained them to expect that they could get a hold of me at all times because that's all I was doing was working, you know? And so it is, you have to retrain the people around you and set these new boundaries like, oh, actually, no, I don't work 24 hours a day anymore. Sorry about your luck. Yeah.
No, but they expect you to. And they're like, why can't I get a hold of you?
The funny thing is a lot of them don't expect you to. We just do it. And the minute you say, I'm not doing it anymore, they're like, okay. And nobody dies.
No one dies. But do we feel like guilty or do we feel like people think we're going to be slacking off if we don't respond right away? And that's what I felt like the person at work was like, what were you doing? Where were you? You know, I was
in the meeting with the CEO. You know,
But what if she were she were taking a break to eat?
Yeah.
That would be okay, too.
Yeah.
We're
in the bathroom. I was in the bathroom.
I was taking a walk on the beach because I deserve it. You know?
So I chose a profession where people need to get a hold of me 24 hours a day. Yeah. And I was used to, when my dad was in private practice before he became a judge, and even when he was a judge, people were able to get a hold of him 24 hours a day. So I'm okay with it. The issue, I think, is that employers have gotten the huge benefit of this bargain in that their employees, men and women alike, are now being compensated for about 8 hours of work, but are on call and expected to respond 24 hours a day with no raise and no promotion. Mm-hmm. So it's a constant take more work, take more work, take more work, and be thankful you even have a job because so-and-so down the street doesn't, and they're losing their house.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I was in management at Ford, but every perk I received at Ford was through deliberate advocacy from unions.
Yeah.
I enjoyed the same benefits because most Ford management received the same benefits as union employees. And so I really have to thank the union employees for fighting for workers' rights. And it was also the result of liberal, democratic, progressive policies about how to handle workers. you have to compensate them if they're working for you. And now there's also the whole societal issue of women doing work for free. And I've done tons of work for free, and it fulfilled me to do pro bono work. I think that actually is a moral obligation of an attorney, because we've seen what happens when people don't have access to the justice system like they should. I've seen, you know, rich people. Brian Stevenson, who's one of my heroes, says the justice system treats rich, guilty people better than innocent, poor people. Mm-hmm. And that is absolutely true. We have to change that. And part of that is by, you know, devoting your time. It's what you said earlier about someone just the expectation that you're going to work for free. I think that that does apply to men as well. In the employer-employee relationship, when you have a large employer who just expects that their employees are going to be working 24/7 for them.
Mm-hmm. But I think in the freelance community, it's much, it's not as common for someone to ask a man, hey, can you just do this for free for me so I can see, you know, what your work is like?
Yeah,
but they don't hesitate to ask a woman, well, yeah, I need you to do this for free, or, you know,
prove yourself.
Yeah, or can you discount your rate, you know, substantially for me? No, I need it a little lower.
That might. No, here's
being
an entrepreneur and a new entrepreneur. I get asked it a lot. I do get asked to bring down my rate. And I understand it when it comes from family. Like, I'm doing a family tour on Friday, and it's, you know, a bunch of people who are on a fixed income. Like, all right, you know, you're my mother-in-law. I'm not going to charge you too much. I'm not going to do it for free, but, you know. But, she, you know, she let us live in her house for a year, so I would do it for free if she asked me to. But there are – I sometimes have to wonder, just as an entrepreneur, not as – I'm coming from a point of view where I'm thinking this happens to everyone. Mm-hmm. So not just men, not just women, just everyone. But it's – I only have my perspective, so hear me out on this. But I sometimes don't know if I'm negotiating or if I'm being undervalued. But I'm also a new entrepreneur, so I don't know that. Now, if 10 years from now I'm doing this and I totally know my worth and people keep lowballing me, then I think I might know. But I'm discovering what it means to be an entrepreneur. So I guess I would push back in saying that I get asked – all the time to do something, to give something away for free, or to do it for way lower than what it is worth. Like, I will do a free walking tour of downtown Detroit every Saturday, and I will make more money off of tips from that tour than what someone is willing to pay me. And I'll have like six people on that tour. Oh my God, this is the best tour! It was amazing. I go walking tours every city I visited in the, you know, United States and the world. Right. More money off of that than someone who wants me to do 30 people. I'm like, that's ridiculous that happens. And I don't know if it's just part and parcel to being an entrepreneur, but it's I get lowballed all the time.
You know, and some of it might just be the industry.
Yeah, it could be the industry I'm in. Like, a tour, really?
If I bring a male colleague with me, you know, the cards don't always play the same way. So it's
All right. See, I do that with my wife for when we got our Airbnb for our honeymoon. We did an Airbnb. It was fantastic. It was a person who had bought an entire building, and so they just rented out every single apartment in Washington, D.C. But I told her, don't put my face in the profile, because of the whole racial thing was going on where people were like, we don't want black people staying in our house, and they were canceling all – the Airbnb was canceling those people's accounts. But I find that on the race – I feel like – black people are the white women of the world in terms of, like, deal making, I guess. Because same thing with when we wanted to go get a car, when we wanted to go apply for a car. I was like, don't mention me in the situation. Like, but you're a man and you're going to give me a better deal. Like, but I'm a black man. So you're not going to get a better deal. You're going to actually get a worse deal. When we went to open up our my business account at her bank that she recommended, the lady came out of the office, said nothing to me, spoke only to her, denied us immediately. I complained about it on Facebook. The president of the organization contacted me. They're now a client of my tour company. And I do.
Well done.
But it was still, you know, I feel solidarity on the racial side of things. Like, I hear it, but I experience mostly because I'm black more than because I'm a woman, because I'm not a woman, right, obviously.
Well, I think that this is something that just historically marginalized populations just share, period. Right. I mean, and And so you're going to, I think your experience will be very similar in some ways.
I'm going to tell you, how women get marginalized so much. Like, you make up half the damn population of the world. Like, how did that happen?
It's a good question, yeah, isn't it? Right? But, you know, I see also it's just we were trained differently. We were trained differently than the men in our lives. It's for the most part. And again, gross generalizations. But, you know, because on top of owning the She-Hive, I have a consulting company. So I consult with organizations. And I see men, white men, who are full of shit. Let's be honest. Just full of shit. That don't know anything or know one thing. They're a one-trick pony. And they charge hundreds of thousands of dollars.
Or become the president.
Or become the president, yes. And I propose a pretty decent rate, and I get talked down. Like, I'm just not really sure because I work, you know, on soft skills. You know, it's the shit that really matters. So,
well, that's interesting because even when we talk about gender differences in learning or gender differences in achievement or academics or in the educational environment, boys versus girls, boys tend to be more like overestimate their abilities and be overconfident, which girls might have the same level of skill set or the same level of skill, and they tend to undervalue themselves.
Yeah.
So it starts very young.
The same thing goes when people apply for jobs. If a man and a woman look at a job description and they have the same background, the man, if say there's five things, if the man maybe has one of them, say, oh, I'm going to apply. If a woman looks at it, she'll say, well, I don't have all five, so I'm not going to.
Yeah, the research shows if he knows that he can do the first bullet point, he applies for that job. And I even, because I still toy about with this, every once in a while I'm like, I'm going to go back to work knowing what I know now. It's like going back to childhood, being an adult, right? And so
I'm finding out so much about men because I do that. Yeah. I was like, oh, I just thought everybody did that.
No,
and apparently it's not true.
No, women actually, like, you'll go through, and actually recruiters have told me, only the first three bullet points matter. Those are the ones they're actually looking for. Everything else is a nice to have. But women will literally read that list of 50 bullet points, and we get to number 49. And we're like, oh, shit, I don't know how to do that. I'm out.
Huh. Wow.
Where a man's like, I don't know what an agile coach is, but I bet I can do it. I'm like, I know I could probably do it too, but
when you that's why I like those memes. When you lied about everything on your resume, like they're like, all right, so go ahead and do it. Like,
but I have literally known men that have lied about, like, I won't call him by name, but somebody that actually does tech for General Motors knew nothing about tech, lied about everything.
See, that's where I feel like you get caught on day one.
No!
Like, if I lied about tech, I would not.
Yeah, he learned on the job.
That's crazy. Okay, wow. So let's move forward. How can companies, and I think we talked about this a little bit more earlier when we talked about companies raising babies together, like bringing your kids to work. I love that. Beyond just bring your kids to work day, that kind of deal. How can companies become more welcoming spaces to women in general, working mothers in particular?
I don't know, having daycare like at the company or the company that I just applied for, work from home.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Daycare and also having paid maternity leave, paid parental leave. I mean, they've shown in California, you know, it's a state benefit for them to have paid maternity leave. And
I think there's some countries where you're like going for like a year.
A lot of Scandinavian companies. And
all the ones that rank really high on the World Happiness Index.
And paternity leave, too.
Yes.
I also think getting rid of this archaic idea that I have to watch you do your work. You don't have to watch me do my work. You just need to see my output. And that I have to be under your thumb from 9 to 5. You know, what I love about working in my consulting practice, I work for small businesses for the most part. And they're like, well, I don't care when you do your work, you know, just as long as this is my deadline and it's done. And whereas the full-time job I left a year ago, had actually started, and I think a lot of organizations are starting to do this, they're tailoring back from that ability to work from home because they didn't trust their employees and they had to see that you were there from 9 to 5.
I have a friend who works for one of the big suppliers.
Yeah.
And she said that – I have a friend who works for one of the big suppliers, and she said that is the thing that you have to – they pay attention to when you get to work and when you leave.
Yep.
And she can't just work an extra hour through the week to take half of Friday off or something.
Yeah, that was the biggest fallacy of my last job. So prior to the new administration coming on, we could work from home whenever we wanted. And I would work more than 40 hours a week because I love my job, and I would do it whenever I could, and I would fit it in when I could, and I was in the office twice a week. And the new CEO came on board and took away the ability to work from home. I would literally sit there for hours with nothing to do.
Ben and Jobs like
that.
Yeah.
You know?
That's the worst.
And I'm like, well, aren't you glad you can watch me do nothing? But, you know.
So
as an attorney, I had to call into attendance every day and say whether if I wasn't going to be in at, you know, the normal business hours. And I had to specify if I was taking personal time, vacation time, sick time, or if I was out of the office in a meeting where I was. And that attendance list was distributed to about, and I'm ballparking here, 85 people every day. And to me, if an organization's leadership doesn't trust its employees, that's a dysfunctional organization.
And not just that we don't trust the employees, but we don't actually ask them to act like adults.
Well, and, you know, my mentor, you know, my dad was one of my best mentors, but my mentor, who is Judge Jim Rashid, says, trust everyone, but cut the cards. So, look, my husband's an employer. He knows that there are some employees that scam the employers. Right. I mean, that does happen. It happens frequently. So you do have to check on people sometimes. But monitoring their output is likely the best way to check on their progress, right? Mm-hmm. I think that when you empower people, it's a leadership quality that will grow your business. And if you don't empower people, if you have a micromanaging leadership style, you need an employee who wants to be micromanaged, because there are people who want to be micromanaged. There are people who aren't self-starters and don't want to use their discretion, and they want a task list, and they want to say, okay, I'm going to get the joint sand from Lowe's. I'm going to come back. I'm going to go back to Lowe's again and get the different joint sand. Then I'm going to put this, you know, and they want that list.
By the way, I'm putting in the joint sand when I get home.
Different people work differently, right? Yep. Not everyone wants to be a business owner. Yep. Not everyone wants to be a CEO. Some people want to make a paycheck, do an honest day's work, and go home and not think about it.
An honest day's work, though. That's so we also have to stop saying stuff like an honest day, because my honest day of work happens between 10 and 12 at night. But I also think that there's I also think that one of the things that we can start doing is helping men understand what it means to be an ally. Men haven't been trained, and I mean, they've been trained one way. We can't expect anything differently unless we actually educate them on something differently. Like, even my husband, I'm a woman who runs a women's empowerment organization, and somebody asks me what I do, and he'll explain it for me. And I'm like, you know, like, because he's been trained to be the explainer. And I'm like, I own the business. I developed the business plan. I'm pretty sure I can explain it, but he's been trained that he's the one that speaks up on our behalf. So we actually have to teach men how to not do what they've been trained to do all these years.
I'm glad you said that, because at the beginning of the episode I said, and I think I don't know if I said this online or offline, but for those of you listening, I apologize if I'm repeating myself, as well as everyone in the room. But I said, I apologize if I'm asking the wrong questions, because I don't know. Again, I wanted to have a woman lead this particular podcast. She's got family issues, couldn't do it. So I came up with all the questions. We were supposed to put the questions together. Anyway, I might be asking the wrong questions. But I have found, for instance, I have a friend, now former friend, relationship became toxic, but she was an uber feminist, and I was raised conservative, and am at the very beginning of my understanding of what feminism is, what its value is to society, and so on and so forth. So a lot of my questions come from an honest desire to understand, but also from an honest place of ignorance. And I've realized that women have to determine for themselves what amount of emotional labor they want to take on in explaining everything to me. But I also feel like if you were talking to men who don't have the vocabulary or don't know that they're ignorant at all, or at the very least are ignorant but want to know, there's a certain amount of patience that I think is required, that to most people who get it already, it's going to look like sainthood.
Yeah.
To be honest, I just got the we got to get out of here.
I was going to just quickly add too. Yep. I had actually written male allies, and just like identifying and leaning on empowering in a way, validating the male allies that we do have, and I don't think this conversation was like this, but even like male bashing to a certain extent is like not really productive. I think. My husband, for example, I'm really, really blessed that he is, you know, we really share a lot of the responsibilities. He's totally the hands-on dad, and it's awesome. We totally complement each other. When I'm just kind of like at my wit's end, he'll kind of take over. And when I can tell that he's kind of losing patience with the kids, then I'll take over. We really balance each other well. And he's told me, he's like, you know, I'm like totally fine with being the state. He's also a physician and a different specialty, so he definitely needs to work to supplement my income, but or more than supplement it. But he's like, you know, I'm going to work for a few years, but I would totally be okay being the stay-at-home dad. And he's like, well, and the other day we were just talking, he's like, well, actually, I thought that that was our agreement, that I'm going to be working a lot now, and then later on I'm going to retire early, and then you're going to take over. I was like, oh, I didn't realize that that was the plan, but okay, that sounds good. So, yeah, exactly. Male allies and allyship is, like, really, really important.
So I just got the you're not getting kicked out. So we have time for this last question. And the last question is final thoughts. Final thoughts, and then also if you're working for an organization, how we can find out more about your particular organization. So final thoughts on the conversation, and then where can we find out about you?
My final thoughts. You know, one thing that I have read a great deal is that as millennials become more part of the workplace and as they start having children, a lot of the things that we talk about will change because millennial men in general want to be more involved parents than in the past. So hopefully as that group comes of age, some of these things that we talk about changing.
That's because they haven't had kids yet.
Yeah. Well, let's hope that's not true.
Right, I know, right.
You know, some of the things we've talked about will change because they're going to demand it. And millennials in general also really seek out more work-life integration than I think past generations have. So hopefully we'll see that come to fruit in the next 20 years. And Nessa and I are with Reboot Connect Detroit, and you can learn more about Reboot Excel and Reboot Connect by going to our website. It's www.rebootexcel.com.
And I'll provide a link for all of this in the episode info as well. Anybody else? Final thoughts?
I would say every generation has a different definition of success. And what I love about millennials is that there's so much not based upon the home, because they're never going to have a home because they have student debt up the yin yang, right? And it's not about, you know, the home, the house, the family, whatever. It really is about living out this mission and this purpose. And I do believe, I am not one of those people that bash millennials. I think millennials are me, but they didn't wait till they were 40 to ask for what they wanted. And I love that about them. And I do think that I'm very hopeful that they will change a lot of the workforce and what's happening for women in the workforce right now. So, and my organization is the She Hive, and you can find us on Facebook or at our website at theshehive.com.
The is very important.
The yeah. Shehive.com is Africa. Theshehive.com is Detroit.
I think we just got the axe again. So let me read our sorry about, for anybody who wanted to give any more final thoughts, we can continue talking out in the lobby. But thanks so much for listening to Leading Questions with Calvin Moore. Make sure that you check out our website, leadingquestionsnow.com, where you can find all of our episodes from this season and last season, bios, a calendar of upcoming topics, and even suggest topics for us to talk about. If you're interested in bringing our program out to your college, university, or organization, email us at hello@leadingquestionsnow.com, and we'll get back to you. To our live listeners, thanks so much for tuning in. To those of you listening on iTunes, Google Play, or SoundCloud, thanks so much for subscribing. Please leave us a rating. Tune in this Friday for a special episode discussing the recent protests and violence in Charlottesville. And tune in next Wednesday where my co-host Kent returns, and we are beginning a 3-week political series titled Why I Am, starting out with Why I Am Conservative, and then going on to Why I Am Liberal, and then ending with Moving Beyond Identity Politics. See you next, see you Friday, and then see you next week.
Thank you.
Thank you.